Very welcome along to this week's RTE Rugby Podcast. Two games down for Ireland in the November series. Two more to come, and they're big ones as well. Australia this Saturday at the Aviva Stadium, followed by the Springboks next week. A full house as well in the studio for us this morning. I'm joined by Bernard Jackman, as usual. Birch, how are you today?
Yeah, good, thank you.
And also delighted to be joined this week. He's come all the way from Sydney just to speak to us on the RTE Rugby Podcast. Nothing to do with a game this weekend. Back on home soil this week, Jonathan Drennan from the Sydney Morning Herald. Johnny, thanks a million for stopping by.
Thanks so much for having me, and delighted I can speak in my natural accent and be understood.
People might be wondering, Sydney Morning Herald, Sydney-based journalist, that accent, Jonathan Drennan. Tell us your just quick little backstory for those who don't know.
Yeah, so it's a classic Irish story, Neil, to be honest. So I went out for a year, you know, as most Irish backpackers do, and then met a girl, got married, and I've been there 11 years. So for the last 2 years, I've been working as a rugby writer with the Sydney Morning Herald. So it's a unique perspective, I suppose, being back home in Ireland, but also, I suppose, embedded a bit with the Wallabies team.
Absolutely, and that's kind of why we have you here today, to give us the Wallabies perspective. You came to Dublin from Udine at the weekend. You were saying, when I asked you to join us this week, you said you felt like the only person invited to a funeral last week. Tell us what was that like, particularly as you kind of said, the only member of the travelling Australian media on this tour.
Yeah, it was really surreal, to be honest. I mean, Udine, for those who don't know, it's the home of Udinese, yeah. In Serie A. It's near Trieste and Venice. Absolutely stunning city. In normal times, you would really be thanking your lucky stars that work have sent you to such a beautiful place. The game itself was incredibly frustrating for Australia, and it really just shows how far things have gone from August, when they beat the Lions in the third test, and then they beat the Springboks, obviously, in Ellis Park. Really sluggish performance, and the post-match press conference, I was the only person there from Australia, and Joe Smith's obviously good articulating these things, but it was a huge challenge. And Harry Wilson, the captain, you could just see he was absolutely exhausted, devastated. So I did my best, but it wasn't fun.
It's really difficult to kind of get a read, Bernard, on where Australia are as a team and where Australian rugby is as well. Like, I got to be there in the summer for the Lions tour, and even those 3 weeks was a bizarre roller coaster of emotions, where the first week leading up to that first test, it felt like there was next to no interest in it. Leading up into the second week, you could start maybe feeling it, you know, ramp up ever so slightly. After that second test, it felt, oh, we're back now. We're absolutely back. It was a huge week of build up into the third test. They got their win. Felt like Australian rugby was now back. Then they go to South Africa and they get their win there, which shocked everyone. And you're thinking, wow, they're on a proper roll here now. And rugby championship was up and down, and then they go to Italy last week, lose, poor enough performance against Japan a few weeks ago as well. They're an incredibly hard team to get a read on.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant to have Jonathan here, because I think from most of Irish rugby fans, they went into that Lions tour not really knowing what to expect, or didn't expect a huge amount from Australia. Then obviously I think we all felt that second test and third test, that they turned a corner. And I've watched the rugby championship, it's been very up and down since then. But the last couple of weeks, the Japanese performance was incredibly poor. They limped over the line against Japan, and then we saw South Africa go out and smash Japan. Ireland dealt with them pretty comfortably. And then the Italy performance, they just look, for me, look like a team who are maybe over the top in terms of physically tired or emotionally tired. But certainly they don't look the same team, because even during the rugby championship, there was flickers of power, athleticism, you know, skill. They've got some brilliant X-factor players. And against Japan and Italy, that there was no sign of that. And I'm hoping, Jonathan, that this week, I don't know, the Aviva just gets them back up. But is there anything left in the tank? Are they running on fumes?
I mean, the fatigue question has been asked. I'm in two minds about it. They play probably most Southern Hemisphere teams come and play three tests generally, whereas they played Japan and they played England outside of the test window. Now, the flip side of that is the players, 95% of them play Super Rugby, which is a far shorter season than in Ireland, for example. There's no European rugby and the players are managed. It's a little bit like the Irish central system. I spoke to Fraser McWright after the game and put that question. I mean, he said, absolutely, that's nonsense about the fatigue. Now, as a former professional player yourself, Bernard, you know a player's hardly going to go, yeah, actually, we're cooked with two more games. So I'm not too sure. I think Australia at their best are really, really good side, but the depth's very thin. So there's been a couple of injuries. Tom Wright at fullback, who was obviously very, very good in the Lions.
He was unbelievable in the Lions.
Yeah, so he really provides that spark. Will Skelton has been out because of club commitments with La Rochelle, and then he flew in to Dublin, the shortest at Wallabies camp of his career. His ankle was injured against Toulon. So what they're really... There's a couple of things I'm noticing. Number one, they can't break the gain line. Number two, their discipline, which in a Joe Smith team is not good. And the third thing in a Joe Smith team, they're losing attacking ruck ball. So those three things have been absolute huge work-ons, and we'll see against Ireland what happens.
I wonder, is there any amount... We talk about post-lines fatigue from this side.
Does it work both ways?
Does it work both ways? And obviously the counter-argument is no, it shouldn't, because they actually... It wasn't at the end of their season. Mm-hmm. The Australia only played one warm-up game, which is Fiji. They actually looked undercooked. But my question
is...
It's
a regular international window as well in many...
100%. They normally would be playing them. But you'd be naive to think that Lions tour for the home side doesn't take you to a place emotionally that other tours or normal games don't. And particularly for Australia, when the whole talk was this tour can... this Lions tour or Lions series can save Australian rugby, and all the financial issues in the background, etc. The need to step up and be competitive. Remember, some of us were talking about, if Australia aren't competitive, do we try and replace them for Argentina? Mm. There was a huge amount of pressure on these players. And in fairness to them, they found a couple of decent performances. But since then, and the Rugby Championship, there was I still thought they were on the right track. But unfortunately, over the last couple of weeks, it looks like they're just dying on their feet. And is that fatigue with Joe Schmidt? Is camp too intense? I don't know, but certainly there's big question marks now around where they're at. There is lots of talent in Australian rugby, but they don't just their curve doesn't seem to be going up again like it was, I would say, after that third test.
I was gonna say as well that it's so different in Ireland. We were discussing earlier, Ireland obviously can have low periods, but there's always going to be that grow or that interest for the game, which has been built over a while. Australian rugby, it's either really high or desperately low, and that goes from game to game. So I think it's a real challenge for Joe Smith, because on one side, he's preparing the best possible handover for World Cup he won't be judged on. There's 12 players in the squad that were given a test debut by Joe Smith, and also players like Lenne, Katai, who were left out of the World Cup squad, Joe Smith players. But equally, the Australian game demands success, and at the very least, you should be beating Italy. So it really leaves Ireland. I mean, France is just a gigantic challenge, but I think people have very short memories. I mean, Joe Smith came in and it was an absolute bin fire he inherited. But what a pity if the narrative changes after all that good work, the Lions, South Africa, to really ending on a low note with no wins in Europe.
Aside from the product on the pitch, what has the general mood and temperature been around Australian Rugby Union been since that Lions tour? Aside from the vastly improved bank balance,
yeah, that was enormous,
and that is it's a hugely important part of it, but there are other elements too.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as I say, it ebbs and flows with momentum. And the difference is, the huge difference I always tell people back home in Ireland is, you have what we call code wars. So you basically have rugby league, which is the biggest code in Sydney and Brisbane, really, you know, happily denigrating rugby union when it's low. And at the moment it is quite low after defeats to Italy. Then you've obviously got Australian football, you've got the Ashes coming. So at the moment, I would say the temperature in Australia generally is ambivalence. It's not even anger necessarily, apart from the rusted on fans. It's ambivalence, which is such a pity after so much painstaking work to come back from the first test in the Lions when everyone wrote them off, to come back in 2 and 3 with performances, then South Africa. And then let's not forget, they came incredibly close to nearly beating New Zealand in Eden Park. So from there to here, where they're staring down the barrel of new wins in Europe, it's a huge game this weekend.
There's also been, like you mentioned the Code Wars, and it's almost ramping up between Carter Gordon coming back. Talk about Mark Nwanganatuasi coming back. It seems Rugby League has been dragged into this R360 stuff as well. Players using that as a way to, you know, obviously eke out a little bit more on their own contracts. How has that factored into the code wars?
I find it really challenging. I think as an Irish person, I was saying to you and Bernard before, if for Irish people, the analogy I'll give is, say Ireland win the Six Nations, and then the head GA writer of any outlet is saying, well, that's good, but it's nothing to All-Ireland Sunday at Croke Park. And I just think...
Do you get a tiny little bit of that?
Do you? Well, I'll give you an example. So after the first test...
Wouldn't be unheard of, but anyway.
But I'll give you an example. So after the first test of the Lions to defeat, the back page was TV ratings and how much better from another outlet, how much better the State of Origin was comparatively to the Lions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's typical. So I feel with Mark Nwanganatuasi, it's really interesting. I think he was really upfront with the Roosters. It's not 100% confirmed where he'll end up, because the priority for players to get picked for Australia is always going to be to remain in Australia, very like Ireland, with some exceptions. With his talent, I imagine there is an exception. I can see him either in France or Japan, but people also need to remember Mark Nwanganatuasi is also eligible for Italy and Fiji. Carter Gordon, I think it was just a necessity to bring him back in, because that's something to look ahead for this game. There's a huge dearth of out halves in Australia at the moment. Tom Lynagh has had injury problems. Noah Lolisiu, who played last year against Ireland, had a really severe injury. So, yeah, that's going to be a big, big issue for them this weekend.
Jonathan, obviously the game against Italy, where would you say the big areas of the game that Josh needs to fix this week are?
Yeah, so I think the biggest one is attacking ruck. So, I mean, people always say that 60% of it is on the ball carrier, but I went through the game yesterday, 4 penalties conceded on their own attacking ruck, just unable to retain the ball. So that's obviously not good enough. The second one is punch through the game line. So Rob Valentini, he says he's fit. I'm not 100% sure. His calf seems to be still maybe slightly restricting him into fourth gear. Not 100%, but they're just not punching through the gain line. So I think the top carrier was Tom Hooper with post contact with 30 meters. Harry Wilson he's really Captain Australia, you know, the heart, soul, the emotion. But I mean, he was heavily penalised and could not break through. So expect a lot of changes. I think expect Lanikitai. The attack barely packed a punch. So Lanikitai is the most crucial link in that back line. Without him, I don't think Joseph Akusu-Suolihi really is able to be at himself. So I think you'll see a far better Australian team, but there's some massive work on them, discipline as well. I think it was 12 or 13 penalties conceded. So it slightly amuses me when Ireland, the narrative has been, oh, they're on the downward curve, and I'm like, it's 13 points defeat against New Zealand. You know what I mean? We're not comparing apples and apples.
But I think it is worth noting that Australia have come here in 2022. They came here last year as well. On each of those occasions, we were coming into that week talking about an Australia team who were low on form off the back of a poor defeat. 2022, they were literally coming in off the back of a historic defeat to Italy in Italy as well. On both occasions, they rise and fall to the level of their opposition so often, and they've given Ireland enormous problems in both of those occasions.
Yeah, I would fancy this to be a humdinger of a game. I think Australia will find a bit more than they've shown in the last couple of weeks. I think the challenge for Ireland is that when we come up against teams like Australia, you have a fair bit of power, and I know their carries weren't as good last weekend, but there's no doubt that man for man, this is a pretty athletic Australia team. I think Ikitau coming back in is absolutely massive. I think that they'll fix the areas, so their carry and clean will be better this week, because it was obviously a big issue. It's a late kickoff in the Viva. I don't know, sometimes those games away in Italy can often, as you say, drag the favourites down to a lower level. Italy, I think, are also on the up, to be fair to them. I think Quesada's done a great job there. So I'd love to see Australia find that bit. And, you know, remember the first test without Valentini. Like, if they can get Valentini onto the ball, and if he is okay and fully fit, he can punch. And you only need one or two. Iketau can punch, and then suddenly it's so much easier for like Swahili and the flair players out wide. So my only fear is that it's obviously the Emperor's about to leave and Joe is going, and are they in that kind of are they sleepwalking till the end? That's what it's looked like over the last couple of weeks, to be honest.
The counter argument to they raised their game for the better opposition. You kind of pointed out to me just as we were walking in earlier on as well. How do you factor in the England game then? Because they were quite limp and weak in that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the depth is an aspect. Now, Ireland have Jamie Osborne out, Hugo Keenan, so that's not to say that that's an excuse. But I do think it's very obvious the depth in Irish rugby is so much stronger. So Australia's strongest possible first 15, I really believe, can match it with anybody in the world. I think Tom Wright is a huge loss. Then Tate McDermott off the bench, he gives you that snipe, something very, very different to Jake Gordon, who's almost, I'm not going to say ever as good, but he's a Conor Murray type player, very good box kicking, very good defence. So they've really lost a bit of attacking spark there. They've also lost a lot of continuity. So Smith really invested in Noah Lolesio at 10. Then he injured himself before the Lions against Fiji. So again, Smith is trying to do that catch 22 where he's trying to blood 10s, give them that experience they need ahead of the World Cup. So Tane Edmett, who's pretty raw, you know, he was in and out of the Waratahs team. And then Carter Gordon, who just over a month ago was in rugby league. So I really think they've got a performance in them. The narrative yesterday, we had Lene Katau up. It was essentially Joe Smith saved a lot of careers, which he did in Australia. There were people who were on their way out, Tom Wright, Harry Wilson, they weren't given a shot, who are now key members. So there's a huge amount of love and respect for Smith and the team. And if they can't get up for this, they might as well give up because it doesn't get any bigger.
Jonathan, just you might tell our listeners, what's the current rule in Australia for non-domestic players being picked? So obviously Katow's in Exeter, you mentioned Skelton and La Rochelle. How many can Joe Schmidt, Les Kiss actually pick who don't play domestically?
Yeah, so just for clarity for people at home, there used to be what was called the Gittau Law, where you had to have over, I think it was like 35 caps. That's gone. I mean, that's officially been made redundant. Now, Joe Smith is on the record as saying priority will always be given to the Australia-based player. So I suppose the analogy would be, which maybe isn't a good one, imagine Ireland where they're still playing Sexton for Racing Metro because he's so far ahead of his competitors. So, for example, Skelton gives you so much more. And actually, at the moment, Tom Hooper is playing the house down, who's at Exeter. But they like to give the priority where there's two equal players, they'll go for the Australian-based player. But at the moment, no. In theory, they could pick anybody. They could pick, you know, Tom Banks in France. It's gone.
Yeah.
But is that the rule that Joe Schmidt is putting his foot down over? Is it possible that rule changes or it goes back to a Gittau rule once Les Kiss takes over?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean,
how hard and fast is that at the moment?
I think it's looser than it has been, but I still think they're trying to almost Australian rugby. It's no secret that they looked at the Irish system as a really, really good system in terms of centralization. So I think that they'll always try to look within their own system. But then there's the argument as well as Super Rugby providing the adequate competition when you come to Europe. So Skelton, Iketau, James O'Connor at the moment, who's in Leicester, they're able to give that IP in terms of just able to see different opposition, mauling, for example, how different set defences set up. So I think increasingly you'll see more players come in. Who knows where our 360 is going to go there in terms of Australia. But I think as more talented players come, a really great example, there's a young guy called Heinz Lomoto. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's an outrageously talented 17 or 18 year old, and he was really heavily pipped by rugby league. He's gone to Toulouse. This kid's going to be a star. There's no way they're not picking him because he's playing in Toulouse. Mm-hmm. So I think it's loosening.
Mm-hmm. Before we move on to Ireland, one player I do want to bring up just because of the Irish interest, Angus Bell, who will be heading up the road to your home province in just a couple of weeks' time, really.
Yeah.
Irish rugby fans will know a bit about him. He's obviously played against Ireland and stuff like that before, but what can you tell us a little bit more about him? What should Ulster fans be expecting?
I think he's an absolutely brilliant player. He's young, you know, he's only 24, 25. He's a very smart guy. I think he's on his day. He's one of the world's best props in terms of as a ball carrier. He's been a little bit up and down. He got actually a really good try against Italy, which really should have been the momentum that Australia went from. I think as a scrummager, he's improving. Off the field, very bright guy, very interested in other cultures. I think he will go well in Ulster, because the one thing I know about Ulster is if you embrace the community, they will, you know, give you that back threefold. At home in Australia, or adopted home in Australia, he's very involved with charities, helping disabled children. So he there's a lot to him as an individual. And I think as long as he stays injury free, which people forget, I mean, he had a serious surgery on his foot, and he basically had to learn how to scrummage differently. Mm. A bit more on his toes.
And even I remember this time last year when he was over, he wasn't even really playing too much, because I think at the time he was carrying a few knocks and bumps and bruises.
Yeah, so he's come through that, and more credit to him. I hope that the artificial pitch up there at Ravenhill doesn't affect all the progress that he's made. But I mean, what I would say to Irish rugby fans, Ulster rugby fans, is you're getting a phenomenal player. You're getting a guy who will be fully, fully committed. I think the other interesting narrative is I looked at the European draw. They play Racing, so he'll be locking horns directly with his great friend Taniela Tupou.
Yeah,
so that'll be a good one for Belfast. But no, he's a great guy, great player, and I think as long, you know, as he stays injury free, Ulster have got a phenomenal player.
And it's interesting from an Ulster point of view as well, because obviously when that was announced, it's the Jordy Barrett signing last season. It's the short term, half a season essentially. You are wondering, as soon as that announced, what shape are Ulster going to be when he comes in? Is he going to be coming in to firefight and try to get Ulster into a top eight? Or is he going to be coming in to try and kick on a good start? He's coming in to kick on a team that's had a really good start.
Yeah, and that's brilliant for him, because like it's so hard to come in, settle in a new city, you know, even if he's very open to it, find your form, learn the team shape. Like that team now is up and running. They've got confidence. And also, there's probably... they actually don't look like they need his ball carrying as much as they did 6 months ago. Now, obviously, it's going to be incredibly important to them, but it's going to be shared. He's not going to be the sole focus for defensive teams. So, looks like a great signing. I just think Richie Murphy would be just crossing his fingers, hoping that he doesn't get injured over the next couple of weeks and gets up there and has an impact.
Yeah, he'll be watching this weekend's game with his hands in front of his face. Let's talk about Ireland, though. We'll park the Wallabies for now. I do want to double back a little bit on Joe Schmidt, maybe a little bit later. But Ireland back to winning ways on Saturday. As 41-10 wins go, pretty underwhelming. The early kickoff didn't help. 12:40 p.m., real sleepy atmosphere. Mm. I took a photo literally at kickoff, and it was pretty much a sellout. I think it was 50,000 people at the Aviva on Saturday. Couldn't have been more than 35 in. By kickoff. And by halftime, it was actually full. You could see the people in the seats. The game kind of matched that feeling for the first half, where it seemed like both teams just weren't really at the pitch of the game for a good half an hour.
Yeah, I thought Japan looked way better than Ireland in terms of it's probably the best kind of attacking sequence that they've shown under Eddie Jones. Now, obviously, there wasn't that finishing ability. They didn't convert that into many points, but I thought they had a stretch. We couldn't really get any purchase of defensive breakdown. Their ball movement, their accuracy was good, and obviously we were inaccurate. You know, we put balls on the ground. Our line out was poor, and you're really going, Jesus, this team is in trouble. But to be fair, the way we finished the game, I think that will give Farrell confidence. I think they were down in Clongowes this week training.
Yeah, they're out there on Monday.
Yeah, and I believe Andy was quite vocal in terms of his discontent with what they were doing at the moment. So look, I think in fairness to him, he doesn't try and sugarcoat it too much at press conference. Obviously, he's not as ruthless as he would be behind closed doors, but he knows this team aren't competing or playing the way he expects them to play. And thankfully he does, because I don't think they are fulfilling their potential at the moment, regardless of whether they're old or young or in transition. So I'm hoping that second half, that extra game, is getting us closer to where we want to be. But at the moment, you're seeing that last half against Japan, second half against Japan. But you're really, to be honest, you're putting more credit more of your hopes in the coaching staff rather than actually what you're seeing, if that makes sense. Like, you're just trusting them to be able to get them back rather than actually can say, yeah, they're back.
Yeah, and like Farrell was pretty clear after the game. Like, he wasn't sugarcoating or trying to put a positive spin on it specifically. Like, he was talking about the second half was a lot more improved. He was pleased with that element of it. I asked him the first question on Saturday, and it was simply, you said this week you wanted a response from your team after New Zealand. Was that the response you wanted? And he said, in short, no. We were feeling sorry for ourselves, is what he said at the first half. He said there was a lack of intent. One of the things he kind of said is what we were defending well, but just well, yeah, instead of having a bite. And I think it's more so than having a really, really potent attack. I think what's frustrating them at the moment is that it is that kind of little bit, they're defending well, not having the bite, the lack of intent. It's the forceful nature of it is seems to be what's disappointing him most.
Yeah, it's all very generic, isn't it? Like, attacking defence, and there's no rawness, there's no one really kind of stepping up and actually saying, I'm going to take this game by the scruff of the neck and I'm going to control it. Like,
I might even use like Tommy O'Brien as an example, where he was player of the match at the weekend and he was absolutely excellent. He made a handful of mistakes on Saturday, but they're mistakes that you can completely forgive because you're seeing someone who's trying something, who's really got a good bit of intent about him. It's a mistake when someone's maybe just thrown out one hand to try catch a pass and that something spills. That's where the frustration comes, rather than someone who's really trying to push for something and it doesn't quite work.
Yeah, we probably did force things down the edge a few times. A couple of balls went to ground there that I'm sure he would have preferred we could recycle. But yeah, Tommy O'Brien was attacking that game with full heartedness and everything that he has, as you would expect, because that's what he does for his province. That's what he does at training. And he is someone now that is very much in the mix. I know Mac Hansen's back this week, but I don't know. I'd be pretty keen to see Tommy O'Brien go again, because I think we need to find out. We need to get him comfortable at this level, because he's going to be part of this Irish squad for a good while. The challenge is why are they feeling sorry for themselves? And I wonder, obviously the All Blacks game, I think the All Blacks game hurt them a little bit because they genuinely felt they were ready to play. Yeah. They really did. I was with them on the Friday in Chicago and they couldn't have prepped better. And they don't go around saying it all the time. You know, they were quite honest. But they felt that their game was back to where it was at the World Cup. And then we saw a match against New Zealand where you could argue we weren't allowed to play, but certainly we didn't have that intent or that kind of rawness about us. So he probably expected to be back this week. It wasn't back as such. But early kickoff and all that stuff, a few changes. I just think this team needs to start to show in its DNA how they're going to defend and how they're going to attack, and then just keep repeating that and get a level of consistency, which, to be fair, it had, like during the Six Nations we were quite mixed as well, so this isn't two games. A little while. November last year we were poor, we were average enough, I would say. So that's what he's getting frustrated with. He's back now, everything is settled, everything's now 2 years time in Australia, but you'd love to see this November a real 60-70 minute performance where we're dominant.
Where are you seeing Ireland at the moment, Johnny, as someone outside the Irish bubble and watching us pick the bones apart of a 13-point defeat to New Zealand and a 31-point win against Japan? And we're treating it like an existential crisis.
Yeah, I mean, I think that just shows the difference at the moment between Irish and Australian rugby, where Irish rugby, there's been so much success that these are the standards that are demanded. Whereas conversely, in Australia, a win against Ireland would just be absolutely huge. I'm looking at two different theories at the moment. I think Australia, Joe Smith is almost sacrificing himself in a way to provide a better handover for Les Kiss. As I said, there's been 12 players who have been debuted by Smith in this squad. So he is really taking the hits and giving playing time to the likes of Tina Edmed in the hope that by the World Cup they'll be ready. Conversely, I see Ireland, see an incredibly talented team, but I also see players who will be on the wrong side of potentially 34, you know, coming into the World Cup. So I think we're very short term, all of us are, but also how will history judge Smith and Farrell by the time the World Cup comes? because, I mean, players like, I mean, Jorgensen's a phenomenal player, a young player, but he's really relished life under Smith. Carlo Tizzano debut, brilliant flanker, really breathing down Fraser McWright's neck. So I think that I think Australia really need to compete, that's for sure. But I do feel they're looking a bit long-term, which doesn't necessarily go well in Australia because you need momentum, you need victories as well.
Yeah, it's kind of fickle sporting environment. I know you'll be doing some sort of analysis piece for the weekend for the TV coverage. Mm. I don't know what you're doing yet. I'm going to take a stab. Does it involve the lineout?
Actually, it doesn't, to be honest.
Okay.
There's enough experts.
This was my segue into the lineout. I was making an assumption.
No, it's not actually. It's about our attacking shape and how important it is for us to get into the 15s. And I think whatever 10 can get us there will be the 10 who ends up being the 10 for Ireland, because from there we can find our shape a lot easier. And we did it a lot better at times against Japan, and then we looked like the Ireland of old. But when we get stuck playing and chopping and changing direction or getting stuck between the 15s, our lack of power really makes us look one-paced and one-dimensional. So I think that's something that Farrell will be absolutely stressing with Goodman and Sexton, of how important it is that we just get into those areas so we can find our shape. And then I think we start to look a lot better. But obviously, part of having the ball is the line-out. And I don't think O'Connell has ever been under as much scrutiny as he has. And he's responsible for it.
Because particularly, sorry to interrupt, but just the weekend just gone, and we spoke last week about the issues in general, but particularly that first line-out of the game where players didn't know what the roles were, and, you know, someone didn't go up at the front and there wasn't a lift, and it wasn't just where one element was off, where it was a bad jump or a bad throw or a bad lift. It was everything was off. And the ever so slightly worrying element of the weekend was there were two of those in the first half. Now, I know it in the end, the stats actually balanced out. It was 14 out of 17 in the end. They ironed those issues out. And Gus McCarthy was 8 out of 8 on his throws when he came on. So, you know, maybe it was just a little blip at the start of a game. But it is worrying when you're seeing so many elements of the engine going wrong.
Yeah, but I think they're going wrong because of a lack of confidence. I think it's now become, it's not just a blip. It's become something that slowly is eroding. Obviously, the last few times we played the All Blacks, we've got ourselves into a lot of trouble in that area. So that is now eking away in players' minds. And you can actually see that when you look at their body language, you look at their movement, you look at their triggers, they're second-guessing each other. There has been confusion around calls. There's been a couple of overthrows. And all in all, it looks like a really unfluid it's a lineup that lacks a lot of cohesion and consistency and calmness. Calmness is the key word. That's the challenge. And I think, Ryan Baird has so much to offer as a rugby player. But looking back on the lines of the first half, without knowing the cause, it looks like he missed the jump or misread too, right? So
Thomas Clarkson was taking the blame for one.
Yeah.
I was reading this morning
from yesterday's media. But again, unfortunately, when the spotlight's on that and the rest of your game isn't humming as much as you would like, it does become a critical area. And if you're Joe Schmidt this weekend, you're saying, look, we need to get bodies in the air. We need to get after this line out. We need to change our defensive shapes after the call. So effectively, if you think about it, you'll see Andrew Porter going to the hooker with a call and a trigger. But at that stage, any team who changes their defensive shape late then is putting doubt in the line of caller's mind, and then obviously it's going to be a lot louder this weekend. The whole thing about they couldn't hear the calls, I mean, that's, you were there, you mentioned the crowd, like, it wasn't a ferocious atmosphere.
I think it was the second of those kind of botched lineouts. You could see Ronan Keller walking away afterwards and puts his hand up to his ear. It essentially kind of didn't hear the call or whatever.
Yeah, I think he obviously didn't hear a cancel call or whatever came.
Yeah.
He would have heard the call from Porter. But again, like, if there's an issue with that, well, that needs to be fixed, because we're going to play in a lot louder stadiums. Stade de France, the Thursday night for the Six Nations, that's noise, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, again, is that an area we need to fine-tune? So it needs to become less verbal, more more visual comms that the hooker can see, everyone can see. And again, this is an area that O'Connell will fix. It's just you'd like to see it being fixed this week. And
do you full believe he will fix it?
Yeah, I do. I think after, absolutely has the technical ability to fix it. The challenge is he's not new into the team, right? So you would expect the system to be better than ever rather than having to refine it and correct it. But that's often, unfortunately, often the way with it. I actually think personnel-wise, someone within that team has an opportunity to grab that by the scruff of the neck under O'Connell's tutelage and say, I am the lineup guru, and make sure that everyone knows their drill, and make sure that we can problem solve during the game and get quality ball. Whoever does that, even if they're lacking a little bit of athleticism or power, they will then become a must start player for Andy Farrell, because we, more than any other team, are so reliant on our lineout starters. So this is, and it's interesting, Darren Murray getting picked, called up this week. I'm not saying he's going to start this week, whatever, but that is something that he does very well. He mightn't have the same collision power as, he doesn't have the same collision power as James Ryan, etc. But if Ireland can't find a lineout that's developing consistent or quality ball with this group of locks and back rows, someone else may end up jumping the gun.
On the Lions, Johnny, Nick Frost had a good old cut off the Lions lineout on a handful of occasions over that summer. How important is he this weekend?
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, it's a lot of doom and gloom from Australia, and sorry to depress any of the listeners, but I think actually there are some things which are good. So I think their set piece, their scrum, traditionally, obviously, you know, Bernard from playing them, you know, the Australian scrum is targeted. I think that's very, very solid. Secondly, the lineout. I actually think the lineout's been really, really good. So they had Jeff Parling, the former Lions England player. He's now head coach of Leicester, so he ran it. It's now former All Black Tom Donnelly. Nick Frost, I really feel, is a brilliantly athletic lineout operator. And then in tandem, Jeremy Williams, who does a lot of the grunt work, maybe a little bit lighter than it, you know, is needed with a skeleton. But together, they're a very, very good defensive lineout operation. And then also, Harry Wilson, the captain, steals a lot of balls. So I think for Australia to have a chance, it's absolutely imperative that they target that lineout. Now, we had Tom Donnelly yesterday, very diplomatic. Of course, Ireland will fix it. But I think that that's something they absolutely have to go after, because that's consistently been a strength of Australia. Frost has played a lot of rugby, but if he can't get up for this one, you know, there's no hope.
And I think we know, like, Joe Schmidt being Joe Schmidt, he will have that targeted for the last few days.
Yeah, and that's the challenge when an area is misfiring a little bit like ours is that the opposition then get excited.
The target on it. Yeah, they're licking their lips
and they build confidence and they build their hopes around that. So it makes it even harder to win that quality ball. But regardless, there's no excuse. We need to start seeing, even if we lose, if there's some great defensive reads, there's great defensive reads. But having those little periods where players are running into each other, there's confusion. That has to stop. I mean, that has to stop, regardless of whether it's like a Def Leppard concert there on Saturday night. We need to be able to get a call in and execute. And if they are good enough to read it, that's fair enough. But what we're seeing at the moment isn't where we need to be in terms of, as I said, cohesion and slickness.
Team news. Interesting kind of team news week, just there with Jamie Osborne officially ruled out. You've Josh van der Fleer, Gary Ringrose, both carrying hamstring injuries. Wouldn't be 100% certain they're going to make it as well. So there are plenty of positions there up for grabs. We'll start on fullback. There are options. Mack Hansen is back into the squad this week. Do you throw him straight in at fullback, having not played in a few weeks? And who knows how he, you know, how close is he to being 100% fit after his injury a few weeks ago? Jimmy O'Brien came on at the weekend. Does he deserve a crack? Do you move Jacob Stockdale over to fullback? There are a few different options there.
Yeah, I'd like to see Stockdale at fullback, to be honest. I know he made some errors at the weekend, but I think if you're looking at proven top-end international quality, Mac has as well, but I think Jacob has it. I think Mac would be a great option on the bench, obviously, because he covers multiple positions, even 10 if you were stuck, ease him back into it. I'd like to see Stockdale get a crack. I'm not sure if he will, mm-hmm. but I'd like to see Stockdale get a crack.
And then I suppose to flip it on the Australian perspective, which of those options of fullback would you not like to see?
Would I not like to see? I think potentially Matt Hansen for me. I think Stockdale, I watched him for Ulster at fullback, and I'm not 100% convinced he's a test fullback. I think he's definitely 100% a test wing. So I would wonder what he's like with his kicking game, marshalling the backfield. But then, I mean, Australia, they're going to have Max Jorgensen, I would be 100% sure, is back in. He apparently was off colour. And Dylan Peach, he's a very, very underrated winger.
Yeah.
So that Australian back three, I think, will be better. And you talk about Ireland forcing the edge a bit. I think Australia, it's been so narrow. Max Jorgensen, I think, touched the ball once or maybe twice against England. So he'll be desperate to look for work. So I feel it'll be a lot of pressure. And also, I mean, Airlie, we haven't even talked about Airlie. I think it's amazing. The two countries with Gaelic football and Australian football, you know, the two best aerial sports, both sides have had struggles. So Australia, that's a huge work on. But whoever's at fullback, be a lot of pressure from a lot of aerial bombardment from Australia.
Then move it to the centres. As I said, Gary Ringrose carrying that hamstring injury. It was Tom Farrell and it was Robbie Henshaw at the weekend. Bondiaki probably needs some minutes to get into him. How well did Tom Farrell go at the weekend? Does he get another crack potentially? You know, because there aren't really standard, like a 13 option is kind of what you want to replace Ringrose. Then you bring back Stuart McCluskey, who looks like he's fully fit now after his groin niggle after that New Zealand game. He was excellent against the All Blacks. It seems like it might be a little bit harsh to leave him out after he had such a good game. I don't know what way that's going to go.
Yeah, and it's amazing given the fact that we're so comfortable with, I suppose, what we have been used to, which is a rotation between Bundy, Robbie and Gary for the last 3 or 4 years, to now being very uncertain, you know, what that central combination looks like. I actually thought Robbie looked better. That was probably Robbie's best game this season. I thought he looked like he was coming back into a bit of form, which is great. I think Farrell, like Gary was going to start last week. Farrell wasn't going to play. Yeah, and then
I think he was down for the 23.
That's
the
right, he was going to be on the bench. Yeah. So if he gets his chance, I thought he did well. He is, I actually think probably at the moment, he's probably more of a playmaker than Gary is in terms of how he's playing the game and how Gary's playing the game. But I don't know. I some way I'm thinking he may go McCluskey Bundy, which he obviously gives you physical power. But it's a big call. If he goes that way, it's a big call. But if you think Bundy's the man for South Africa, do you want to see him play this week? You know, because he has to be Bundy either. Bundy's been a key player for Farrell and Ireland. And again, I think, how do you nurse him back in to get that back out of him? And what we do there will dictate how we play as well. So if we go Bundy and Stewart, well, Stewart was excellent. It's not really how Ireland want to play is that direct in the midfield. So I'm fascinated. I actually wouldn't mind seeing Farrell play again. I think he does bring others into the game a little better than the others.
Speaking of centres, you mentioned his name earlier on, but Joseph Akusasu-Ili, I think every time we see him, he seems to just be settling in better and better and better into rugby union. Can you just tell us a little bit more about how he's gone in this year or two?
Oh, I wouldn't say that recently he's going well. I mean, his ceiling's phenomenal, but against Italy, that was one of his poorest games. He got yellow carded for a high shot, which Joe Smith actually called out in the post-match press conference. And I think that yellow card was really the turning point in that game. So he'll be really, really disappointed. I think his athletic ability is phenomenal. I'm still not convinced that 13's his best position. When he gets a clear break, I mean, there's almost nobody better. And Airlie, he's just a ridiculously gifted athlete. I sometimes wonder, would he be better on the wing? He has played fullback for the Waratahs. But a big thing for him is Ikitai coming back in. Ikitai and him are dovetailing really, really well.
Yeah, they were really nice on the line.
So that'll settle him down.
I was actually interested, Vernon, what you were saying about Bundiaki, because great player, obviously we saw for the Lions, but this is going back to what I'm saying, where Smith is looking to the future. You might get the short-term victories against Australia or South Africa with Bundy, but at 37, is he the option for the World Cup?
Well, I think at the moment the plan is to get him to the World Cup.
Really?
Yeah, I think that's the plan. Yeah. So then it's a case of how do you manage him? But obviously you can't put him on ice as well. He needs to contribute now. I'm not saying he has to contribute this November, but we, like, with that central contracting system, there's an onus on them to go and to play.
I mean, Matt Nonu's still doing it in top 14. Absolutely. What is he, 42, 43? So 37 is spring chicken, yeah.
Look, you never know. With the way the game is going, maybe 35 is what 32 was a few years ago. The one other selection bit to bring up this week, if Van der Fleer was out, what happens at 7? Does Nick Timoney get another go this weekend, or is Caelan Dara starting at 7?
I think regardless of Van der Fleer being fit or not, I think they have to look at getting another line-out jumper into that team. And Doris isn't an amazing line-out jumper, but he just gives
but
you...
But he is an option.
He's an option. He's a better option than Josh or Nick.
And also, but having Conan in there, Conan is a good line-out
option. Conan's a good line-out option and a very, very good number 8.
Yeah.
I think Doris is so good, he can play 6, 7, 8. He can play second role if he had to. And he'd be an addition to the team. So... I think they're considering that. I think it was interesting the way they finished the game with Doris at 7. And if the lineout isn't better this week, with the, looking at the box, defensive line, and how they defend in blocks, I think we may have to look at maybe not having our traditional open side as such for the box game.
Quick verdict?
I think Australia by very narrow. Very narrow win.
I was not expecting that.
No, me either.
With the tone of what you were saying when we were walking into this building today, I was not expecting that.
No, I think if there's any game they're going to get up for, it's this one. No, that's not to say that...
Potentially Joe's final trip to Dublin and test rugby, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Ireland are the overwhelming favourites. Very, very strong consistently. But I think it really is now or never for the Wallabies. And if they come away with no wins from this European tour, it's unthinkable. So if they can't get up for this game, you know, you can forget Paris. So I think very narrow win for the Wallabies, but so many dependent things. You know, if the Irish line-out is fixed, then, you know, we can expect an Irish win.
Irish?
Yeah, no, I think we'll win. I don't think it'll be the performance maybe that Andy Farrell once. I think this team is going to have to rebuild their confidence, rebuild momentum bit by bit. But I think you'll see a lot more of the Ireland of old. And we may never get back to, maybe a long time before we get back to where we were in 2023. But I think this week will be a step forward for sure. I think the longer they spend with Farrell, the better they'll get. Selection is going to be interesting. I know Tom Clarkson was up for media, wasn't he? Yeah. Sam Prendergast was up for media. It's going to be fascinating to see who he decides to pick, because looking at the box last weekend against France, like that game now looks
regardless of how Ireland played over the last 2 weeks. If they had stuffed New Zealand and they were excellent again at the weekend, I'm still looking at South Africa last week against France and going, oof.
Me too. So I think this game now becomes absolutely crucial in terms of our November, you know. Yeah. Like, you don't want to go out of November one win from four. And look, they won right off the chances against South Africa, etc. But just at the moment, this looks like a must-win game, and I think we'll be good enough to do it.
Final bit of business just before we finish up, away from Ireland. The rumour mill in Irish rugby, picking up in the last couple of days, a little talk that Munster, fairly close to getting a non-Irish qualified tight-head prop in, been signed off by the IRFU by all accounts. Any word on the Bernard Jackman rugby grapevine? About some of the names flying around.
My understanding is that they have permission to get one. And I think you look at, you know, John Ryan obviously is fit, but I think Ollie Yeager has picked up another knock. Roman Salanoa is spending a month, I think, in Dublin in the High Performance Centre, just trying to get his body right, and obviously hopefully he can come back and be a big part of Munster's future. I think they need someone. I also think to be fair to their view, this is what they need to do. You know, if a province needs a position, whether it fits into the overall plan or not, even if it's 6 months, you know, there's so much of Munster's season left, and if they need a quality tight head prop, they should be allowed to go get one. I heard they were talking about Michael Alatoa. I think that's off, who's now playing in Claremont. I would say that Clayton McMillan would have a nice black book of props that he's worked with before. He'll be delighted to get a chance to come to Ireland. I also think from Munster's point of view, they're much maligned for their foreign player recruitment for quite a while, but I think the last ones they've made, Takir Abraham's excellent,
yeah.
Nankivell excellent, even last year Bueller, you know, came in as a bit of a punt. Well, in terms of his CV,
like an emergency.
Emergency, you know,
you needed a body somewhere.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. You don't always get it right. Yeah. They did get it right.
And he's like a mini cult hero.
Amazing. So, yeah. Again, that's what you want. You want to see a track record of finding the right person. So, obviously, Ian Costello's in that role now. But I think between Ian Costello, David Humphreys, and Clayton McMillan, hopefully they find someone to come in and help them push on, because it's been a very impressive start to season for them.
That's where we'll leave it today. So, some hell of a slate of matches on Saturday. What a day to burn a hole in a couch. Italy, South Africa, 12:40. England, New Zealand, 3:10. Wales, Japan, 5:40. And two matches at 8:10. Ireland, Australia, and France, Fiji. Thankfully, with the 8:10 kickoff, I can get down to Lakelands on Saturday and see a bit of Terenure and St. Mary's as well, to warm ourselves up. But a reminder as well, Ireland against Australia in the Quilter Nation Series Saturday. Coverage underway from 7 p.m. on RT2 and RT Player. We'll have a live blog on site as well, and live commentary on RT Radio 1 also. Bernard, thanks a million as always. Thank Johnny, thanks for stopping by. I'll see you again later in the week, and we'll be sure to check in with you again. Probably during the summer, I'd say, Ireland down in Australia. We'll have to chat to you again then.
We'll welcome you with open arms. It's always good to have the Irish journalists over.
Great stuff. We'll speak to you again soon, folks.